From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!, live from the Independent Media Center in Los Angeles. Breaking with convention, power, protest, and the presidency. Police beat and trample demonstrators in the streets of Los Angeles as Bill and Hillary Clinton speak, while Rage Against the Machine, the band, plays on. We'll also speak with Wisconsin Senator Russ Feingold about the special interest money pipeline flowing through L.A. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I am Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez as we continue with our precedent-setting broadcast, joining community radio and television for the first time across the United States. Last night, Rage Against the Machine played in a concert outside the Staples Center just as President Clinton and Hillary Clinton were arriving to give their addresses to the Democratic Convention. Reports have been pouring into the Independent Media Center of widespread police attacks on demonstrators. We'll be going to that story in a little while.
In the news, Russia's Navy was trying to rescue more than 100 sailors trapped in a crippled nuclear-powered submarine at the bottom of the sea yesterday after its crew was forced to run it aground. The head of the Navy said the submarine bore marks of a big and serious collision and that he was pessimistic about a positive outcome. He did not say if he meant the crew or the submarine, which was commissioned just 5 years ago. Russia's Navy was quoted as saying that the submarine might have been damaged in a collision with a foreign submarine. Initial reports are that there were no nuclear weapons aboard.
As protest continues here in Los Angeles at the Democratic Convention, this news from across the world, the Czech Republic's interior minister announced that activists who were planning to come to Prague in September to protest against globalization during the IMF and World Bank annual session might be denied entrance into the country. Members of the Initiative Against Economic Globalization, Prague 2000, which is preparing most protest events in Prague, says it's clear to them that activists who organize protests in Washington or Seattle will be targeted for refusal of entry. The activists say the police will use international lists of activists. The FBI is among the agencies currently working in Prague. Activists say they expect upwards of 50,000 anti-globalization activists in the Czech Republic during the meetings.
Vicente Fox, the newly elected president of Mexico, who is expected to visit the United States and meet with Vice President Gore, President Clinton, and George W. Bush of Texas, has said that he will push for open borders for Mexican workers and denounce the violence against them. It is not possible to have a harmonious, stable border, he said. It is not possible to solve the immigration problem if we don't solve the gap where a worker in Mexico earns $5 a day and a worker in the United States makes $60 a day.
According to a new study conducted at Johns Hopkins University, most people cannot taste the difference between caffeinated and non-caffeinated sodas, even though soft drink manufacturers say they add caffeine to enhance flavor. Researchers say the high consumption of caffeinated soft drinks more likely reflects caffeine's addictive properties, not its flavor-enhancing qualities. Roughly 70% of soft drinks consumed in the U.S. contain caffeine. Soft drinks represent the single largest source of added sugar in the U.S. diet. According to sources cited in the study, soda drinking displaced consumption of more nutritional foods and could lead to more tooth decay, obesity, and bone fractures.
The Ford Motor Company released documents yesterday that in 1997, Bridgestone Firestone began receiving numerous complaints of injuries and property damage involving certain Firestone tires that were not recalled until last Wednesday. Many of those claims were sent to Bridgestone by vehicle owners from 1997 to 1999, but the tire maker did not tell Ford, the company said. Ford said Bridgestone's factory in Decatur, Illinois, had been the main source of the problem tires and that the factory had experienced its biggest quality control problems during the years of 1994 to 1996 when Bridgestone was using replacement workers to break a strike by the United Steelworkers.
And a strike by telephone unions against Verizon Communications has entered its second work week, with the two sides at odds over a revised contract proposal now on the table. The distance between the parties dash hopes that 87,000 Verizon workers on strike since August 6 will soon leave the picket lines and return to work. The unions say the proposal fails to address key stumbling blocks. Currently, the company can require employees to work 10 extra hours a week during 7 months of the year and 15 extra hours a week during 5 months of the year. The union says that provision was intended to give the company flexibility during emergencies or periods of heavy traffic, not to allow Verizon to demand that employees work to these limits each week. And you are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! As we continue to get musical pieces from around the country from listeners. This again, lyrics, vocals, drums, bass guitar, piano, organ by Andrew Thompson of KMUD, activist vaudeville radio in California. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez as we bring you the latest news from Los Angeles at the Independent Media Center. As we said just a little while ago, last night, after a major concert or in the midst of one, police moved in on concert goers as they told people to disperse within 15 minutes. The crowds were so large they couldn't leave within that time. They moved in with batons and with horses, with tear gas and other equipment and chemical sprays. Not yet clear what it all was. We're going to be doing a segment on that in just a few minutes. But also, as that all was going on outside, inside the convention center, both President Clinton and First Lady Hillary Rodham Clinton addressed the Democratic National Convention. We are now going to hear a clip of what Hillary Clinton, who is running for Senate in New York, had to say.
From doctors and nurses who every day see children with illnesses that could have been treated earlier if their parents had been able to afford health insurance. Now, you may remember, I had a few ideas about health care, and I've learned a few lessons since then, but I haven't given up on the goal, and that's why we kept working step by step to ensure millions of children through the Children's Health Insurance Program. And that's why it's time to pass a real patient's bill of rights and provide access to affordable health care to every child and family in this country.
Hillary Rodham Clinton addressing the Democratic National Convention last night. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez. Juan, as that was going on inside, protesters outside. But first, let's address some of the issues that we heard her speaking about, like health insurance and what she didn't talk about, which was money in the Democratic Party.
Yes, and I think that the reality is that as President Clinton tried to give the final farewell address to his party here, he tried to build or talk about the record of his administration, and healthcare and the needs of children were critical in his address. And we're joined now by Russ Feingold, a U.S. senator from Wisconsin, who is one who has been critical repeatedly over some of the problems that the Democratic Party has had in being able to meet those needs that both Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton addressed. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Very nice to be on the show. Thank you.
And Senator, you spoke at the shadow convention and were well received there because you raised some of the concerns that you had. And could you talk a little bit about the major ones that you raised at the shadow convention?
Sure. I listened to the president and the first lady last night, and you know, they're talking about a lot of the issues that all of us care about: education for kids, health care, access to health care for everyone, AIDS in Africa. But you know what? We're never going to get anywhere in these issues if we don't have fundamental campaign finance reform, taking away the ability of the pharmaceutical companies, the HMOs, the big hospital chains from controlling the agenda of this country. So you can talk about those issues all you want, but if you don't take the stranglehold of big money out of American politics, you're not going to get very far. So that's what I talked about at the shadow convention. I was very grateful that there was a forum where I could make my views known, and I was grateful for the wonderful response.
I noticed you weren't at the podium of the Democratic National Convention.
I am going to get 3 minutes tomorrow, during which I'll mention my concern about the problem with soft money. I also will make the obvious distinction between Gore and Bush, and that's this. Gore will sign a bill to ban soft money, and Bush won't. But the truth is, we have to go much further than that. We actually have to have complete public financing of all political campaigns in this country if we're going to really have a principle of one person, one vote. So that is where I want to see us go.
That's not what McCain-Feingold does, the famous campaign finance bill.
The original McCain-Feingold bill, which we would have loved to have passed, would have had voluntary spending limits for candidates, and if they agreed to that, they would get basically reduced television rates. That, to me, is second best to public financing. But no, what's left right now of McCain-Feingold, and we are close to passing it, is simply getting rid of these unlimited corporate and wealthy individual contributions that, to me, have made a little bit of a mockery out of this Democratic convention and certainly the Republican convention, because a lot of the action is just behind the scenes at these fundraisers.
Well, when you say a little bit of the mockery, you're talking the Democrats have raised $118 million, the Republicans $136 million in an 18-month period that ended June 30th. How do you respond to the ability of Clinton and Gore to, on the one hand, say that they're in favor of it, but on the other hand, do a very good job at utilizing the system?
Well, Clinton and Gore did a lot of good things, but one thing they did bad was they helped develop this soft money system in 1996, and that opened the floodgates. Now it's the responsibility of Al Gore, if he's elected president, to close it up, and he's pledged to do that. So he has said the words. He said them in Milwaukee. He said he's an imperfect messenger of reform. He is the only one of the two major candidates who is going to get in there and deal with this. But to me, it should start today. This convention this week is raising soft money. The Democratic National Committee should stop it right now in its tracks and say that there never will be a Democratic convention again that allows the fundraising of soft money during the convention. If we do that, and some say it's a risk. I don't think it's a risk. I think what you do is motivate young people and energize people if you show you're willing to risk getting away from this big corporate money. So I think it's a great thing for the Democratic Party to do, and if they don't, I think they do so at their own peril.
What about Hillary Rodham Clinton? We just listened to a clip of her speech last night where she talked about health care, and she referred to a few ideas she once had about them. But the fact is, while the Republicans have painted her basically as a socialist who wanted universal health care, she went far away from that. I remember a photograph a long time ago in the New York Times of her with the Jackson Hole Group, and this was the group that she was consulting with. There wasn't a consumer activist among them. They were CEOs of large insurance companies, HMOs. What are we talking about here? Do you think that if she had put forward truly universal health care, we could have a different health care picture in this country now?
We might have had a better chance. The problem there was two things. One was that obviously the insurance companies were going to do anything they could to stop the Clinton proposal. The second problem was, and I think the First Lady was really suggesting this, it was so darn complicated. It was an attempt to appease in some ways some of these interests. I think we would have had a lot better chance of a simple, universal, single-payer system. That's what we should have in this country. Now, some, like Senator Wellstone, have suggested, and I kind of like the idea, let's establish a national guarantee that every American will have a card guaranteeing them health care, and perhaps we'll let the states administer it with some flexibility so they don't get this fear of a big Washington bureaucracy. As long as it is universal and guaranteed for everybody at a certain level, I think that makes sense, and it's simpler. If it's complicated like it was in 1994, it's easy for those insurance companies to run the Harry and Louise ads and say, what a mess this is going to be from Washington. So if we try again, I hope the lessons she's learned have to do with keeping it simpler and making it guaranteed universal for all Americans.
What about the issue of Social Security? Both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are trying to stake out positions as being the defenders of the Social Security system. They know that senior citizens in America vote more than anyone else, and that both sides are trying to paint themselves as defenders of the system. Are you satisfied that the Democratic Party and that the Gore approach is really defending Social Security?
Well, I'll tell you this. I'm against the privatization of Social Security. And George
Lieberman's for it.
Well, that may be, but I understand he's not for it anymore. Because the position of the vice president, our candidate for president of the Democratic Party, is very different than Bush's. Bush takes the money for his investment schemes out of Social Security itself. He carves it out of it, which risks Social Security. But the truth is, the bottom line is we have to have a guaranteed commitment to Social Security, not as a privatized program, but as a program for every single American that is solvent straight through the next 75 years. If we start carving money out of there for a shaky investment scheme, I don't think it's like sending a man to the moon like George Bush said in his speech. I think it's just foolish. And we have no right to play with that money of the American people. They're relying on it. For many people, it is the most essential guarantee. So my view is it's a system that basically works. It's solvent for the next 33 years. It doesn't need to be gutted. What it needs to be is to be treated seriously and to not have its revenues used in a privatized way.
We're talking to Senator Russell Feingold, Democrat of Wisconsin, automatically a delegate here at the Democratic National Convention, well known for putting forward campaign finance initiatives. He's known for the McCain-Feingold bill. Yet you have McCain standing up also at the shadow convention of the Republican Party, a so-called counter convention that took place at the Annenberg Center at the University of Pennsylvania, and he heartily endorsed George W. Bush.
Well, look, I like John McCain. He's a friend of mine. But the fact is his candidate's going to veto the McCain-Feingold bill, and my candidate's going to sign it. It's a real simple difference. And let me just say one more time. John and I are close friends, and John and I work together on this issue. But we differ on something. He doesn't believe in public financing of campaigns, and I do. I believe that every single campaign in this country should be basically without campaign contributions. What do we need campaign contributions for in this country? So if you're talking about Bush versus Gore, there's no contest. Gore will sign it, Bush won't.
Of course, the side of the money in politics that's never looked at is increasing looks at the contributions, but very little at the spending. As I often say, most of the money goes for television advertising.
Right.
So it's no surprise that the television networks pay so little attention to the issue of campaign finance reform, because political campaigns are bonanzas for the major networks and newspapers.
We should require the television stations to give reduced or free television time as a way to help solve this problem. They have a tremendous benefit from the public of having the airwaves, and the original McCain-Feingold bill would have done that. And you can do that. We already require...
But you were forced to take that out, ultimately.
At this point. But my view is that what we do is first pass the ban on soft money, then move to that, and then hopefully move to public financing. You have to stay in these things for the long term if you want to overcome corporate money, and the first thing to do is get this unbelievable thing they've just been able to do in the last 5 or 6 years. They were never able to give these unlimited contributions until just a few years ago. We got to plug that loophole and then move on to public finance.
Describe what it's like to be here at the Democratic Convention, the Convention Center. I mean, I notice you're not even wearing your credentials right now to get into the Convention Centers, but if you were, you'd be a walking billboard for one corporation or another. What is it this year?
Well, you know, I don't eat...
United.
In 96, it was United Airlines, and they've had some trouble lately, so I don't even have a string this year. I just keep it in my pocket. They let me in anyway.
But also the convention center itself.
Yeah, I mentioned in my speech here at the Shadow Convention, it's right on the convention center. You can't...
Staples.
I even hear people complaining that when they go to their high school football games now, that the scoreboard's got an advertisement on it for Coca-Cola. The corporate influence in this country is infecting everything. And the idea of separating business from government is really being lost. And I think that's why some of these protests are occurring. Many of us are beginning to feel that it is intruding on so much of our life and our traditions and our values in this country that it's becoming what I called here a corporate democracy, not a representative democracy. And we've got to stop that somehow.
In just a minute, we're going to be joined by a number of people who went to a concert last night with Rage Against the Machine. And what they faced afterwards were police moving in on them with tear gas, with batons, with horses, trampling people. What is your response to the growing resistance movement and to the police repression that we're seeing here?
Well, I haven't seen this kind of activism by people in general and young people since the 60s, and I am impressed by it. I think it is wonderful that young people are taking the lead on issues like corporate domination of our culture, opposition to the death penalty, freedom for the people of East Timor, environmental protection. And I think those who are in power should recognize it as sincere. And their gut reaction shouldn't be to crush it. Their gut reaction should be to listen. And so I don't know the specifics of exactly what happened on the streets. But the first thing you should do is understand that people don't do this, especially young people don't do this, if they don't feel that something is wrong. Listening to the people, and especially the young people of the country, should come first, not shoving them out of a street.
Would you condemn the LAPD for what they did?
I don't know exactly what the LAPD did, but if I took a look at it and it looks like it was unreasonable, I certainly will condemn it, but I simply don't have the information yet to know for sure what happened.
And what do you say to those young people who, analyzing the corporate control and influence on the two parties, see the same thing you see, but decide that neither party is worth the effort of getting involved in or supporting?
Well, if both parties continue to swallow vast quantities of soft money and do not reform this campaign finance system, I can't blame anybody for turning away from both parties. So it's up to the parties now.
Do you support,
and that's why I tell the Democratic Party to do it now.
Do you support Nader being in the debates, Ralph Nader and Patrick
Buchanan? Oh, I think it'd be better for the country if these folks were in the debates, you bet. The more the merrier. I think it's better to have a broad debate.
Russell Feingold, we want to thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
U.S. Senator from Wisconsin, one of the delegates here at the Democratic National Convention, will be speaking at the podium of the Democratic National Convention. We'll see how much attention you get from the corporate media.
Don't hold your breath. Thank you.
You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! When we come back, we'll be joined by some of the young people who went to a concert last night. They thought to listen to music, and we'll hear about the police response. Stay with us.
Say, can you see why you should vote for me? I've so proudly been bought by most big corporations. There's the oil company and the military.
You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez, broadcasting from the Independent Media Center in Los Angeles, just blocks from the Staples Center, where last night, in the midst of a concert that included Rage Against the Machine, police moved in. We're joined by a number of people right now in the Independent Media Center who were eyewitnesses to what happened next. Natasha Blake is an artist with the artist network of Refuse and Resist. Michael Slate is also a part of that group. This group is among a coalition of groups that sponsored the concert. Erica Crumple was also in the streets. And Jennifer Blyer was a reporter last night who was behind police lines. Let's take a listen to what the police were doing. We're actually watching video right now of horses moving in, police in riot gear. We are watching the police hitting protesters. Michael Slate, can you describe for listeners who are not watching on Dish Network or on public access cable stations, just listening, what exactly took place?
There was a concert that had been organized to be part of the rally, the first opening rally of the D2K protests. And it was a concert by Rage Against the Machine and Ozo Motley. There was also Culture Clash, a Chicano comedy troupe, were hosting it. And what happened was about Rage play. Well, actually, what happened was in the beginning, the vibe that was there, the beauty of the crowd, people were very peaceful. They were really...
How many?
Actually, there was probably... It began at 6:30 in the morning with people coming in because this concert had been announced on K-Rock. It had been announced in the LA Times. And by the time it began, before the march even got there, the entire space that had been allocated for it was filled up. So there may have been upwards of 20,000 people in that area. And people were tremendously peaceful. We had an orientation from the very beginning that we were each other's brothers and sisters, that this was family there. We were there to protest. We were there to make our voices heard. And we wanted this music to be heard. And basically what happened was that Rage Against the Machine played. Sabia, a group that sings Central American traditional music, opened it up. And you know, if anybody's ever been to a Rage concert, you know people are generally very eager to have Rage play. Well, here, this is the kind of vibe that was here. Because we had set that orientation, people listened to this music. They cheered it. They loved it. They waited for it. They listened to speakers. D2K speakers came up. We welcomed the marchers in. And then Rage came on and played a tremendous set. I mean, just brought people's spirits way up and just gave them that thing that good culture of resistance does in terms of giving people a vision, getting in, planting seeds in your brain.
Well, actually, I was there around that time. In fact, right after they finished playing, I came back, headed back here to Patriotic Hall, and everything seemed extremely peaceful at that point. People were beginning to leave. And what happened afterward?
What happened after that was, after a few speakers, Ozo Motley came onto the stage and began to play. And at that time, they got through about three-quarters of their set. They had two songs left to do, less than 10 minutes, when the police announced to us that they were going to pull the plug. They were turning the power off except for one mic that they had in their hands. And then they stood behind this huge fence and kept announcing, like some Darth Vader voice standing there announcing to people that they were reading the riot act and it was time to be, you know, for people to disperse. And they gave, there at that point, there were thousands and thousands of people still left in that crowd. And it's a very, it's a U-shaped crowd. So there was no way for people to get out. They gave them 10 minutes to get out. And then they started vamping, rubber bullets, gas.
Erica Crumple, could you tell us what you saw?
Yes, during the 10 minutes that we had to leave, I was basically in the crowd, and whichever way I looked at the person in front of me and saw this glazed, shocked look on their face, and I turned over, and I saw a barrage, maybe 50 horses running, like coming at me, and I basically moved forward. I started to run, and then people were screaming, please don't run, because then you have, you know, the possibility of trampling other people, and so I started walking quickly, and where I was led to, where we were being herded, was basically out on this, there was basically one little area, which was an exit, and that was barricaded. So where we had to exit was a very small space and barricaded space. We were completely fenced out, and we were given 10 minutes. And beyond the barricaded space, there were basically another, like, troop of cops, and they had the rubber bullets. So that was our only, you know, exit.
Natasha, what did you see?
Well, right after Ozo Motley was shut down, I was standing right next to the fence, right in front of the Staples Center, and the only thing separating me from that building was a huge line of police. They were really ready for any kind of trouble, and they were just standing there in line, and at this time, you know, everybody was just trying to leave. They were trying to get out of the space, and there was only one exit, and there were young kids around, and everybody was, you know, really just trying to leave, and they just didn't give us time. They just started, and it happened very quickly.
Jennifer Blyer, you were reporting for Alternet, and you were behind police lines. What did you see?
Well, I was on the Staples side of the fence, the side of the Staples Convention Center, and I was standing behind probably four rows of police officers in full riot gear, holding batons, pepper spray, guns, tear gas canisters, all sorts of tactical equipment. What they were basically responding to was a group of maybe 20 protesters who were throwing empty water bottles, perhaps full water bottles that exploded and sprayed the cops with a little bit of water on the other side. The fence separating the Staples side, the Staples Convention Center, from the lot where the protesters had gathered was about 12 feet high, curved at the end, embedded in 2-foot-thick concrete slabs. There was really no way that the protesters were going to scale the fences, but the cops were reacting to the throwing of water bottles as if it was a really serious threat, and I saw them have a standoff for about an hour in which they opened fire with... I don't know if they were spraying rubber, if they were really shooting rubber bullets. What I think it was paint gun pellets, because I was talking to superior officers on the other side who did not know who I was reporting to, who were very open in telling me what's going on. They said, oh, yeah, we're spraying paint gun pellets. We have the ability to load in tear gas pellets at any moment. They started spraying pepper spray capsules that explode on contact to irritate the eyes, nose, and throat. And at that point, I saw what these other guests saw, which is that about 20 to 30 mounted police chased after the protesters on horses. The worst thing I saw was 4 what looked to be Chicano teenagers thrown up against the fence, being beaten repeatedly by police officers on horses with their batons. They had nowhere to run. They were pushed up against the fence, being hit repeatedly until they could finally escape.
Well, you know, Amy, in the last couple of days here in Los Angeles, I have been amazed at the degree of massive police force. We were in Seattle for the WTO protest, and even the Seattle police did not exhibit the level of intimidation of the demonstrators and the huge concentrations of forces that we're seeing here under the administration of Mayor Riordan and the police department here. It is a frightening display of pure intimidation in the large numbers of groups of cops that are circling and cordoning off a huge area of downtown Los Angeles around the convention center. It seems that they are determined to prevent any kind of demonstrations that might develop into disruption, even to the point of these preemptive strikes that they're making on people who are just gathering peacefully.
The LAPD is quite notorious around the country. You've got the Rampart scandal, which just seems to be the beginning. But I wanted to move into what was happening here at the Independent Media Center as the protest and the concert was going on at the Staples Center. It is quite remarkable right now that we can even broadcast. In fact, there are 2 national shows that are going out of the Independent Media Center. One is Democracy Now!, which is airing around the country on radio and cable television. The other is Crashing the Party, which airs every night. And when Crashing the Party began their premier broadcast here in Los Angeles at the Independent Media Center, we were all together here in the newsroom of Patriotic Hall. They were going on air in about half an hour. Laura Flanders was co-hosting the program, and all of a sudden, it was said that there was a bomb threat, that there was a van outside that was believed to be filled with explosives. This was a van driven by 3 young people, 2 girls, twins, I believe, and a boy who had come up from another part of California, and they're part of the radio team here at the Independent Media Center. They said their car contained explosives. And before we knew it, the shadow convention was cleared out on the first floor. That's Arianna Huffington's group, where they were having hundreds of people come and look at campaign finance issues. And on the 6th floor, where we were then told that the broadcast truck that was outside, because it was near these kids' van, was being shut down, and they could not broadcast their show nationally. Now, when we were in Philadelphia, something similar happened. Right as we were about to go to air, there was a jumper across the street at the car park. Not clear what was going on. They closed off the entire area. Someone they said was going to commit suicide, who ultimately didn't. Here, it was a bomb threat. They encircled the area, cleared half the building out. The most important thing is they shut down the broadcast truck. Right next to it, the broadcast truck for Shadow Convention was not shut down. And then the police started to clear the floors. It was then that the head of the Los Angeles County for Public Safety moved in and came to the convention, came to Independence, to the Independent Media Center, and started to be questioned by a group of us reporters. And this is what he had to say.
Any type of explosive devices could have blown up the whole building, maybe?
I had no idea.
So it could have been anything.
Could have been anything.
So were the proper precautions taken to secure the safety of the people in the building, the Seattle Convention?
With the information we had, yes.
Was the van searched?
The van is being searched as we're speaking.
Was it searched originally by sheriffs?
It was searched by county police. Yeah.
And what did they find?
They found nothing.
So what's the problem then?
Well, they didn't do a complete search because I pulled them out.
Why?
Because it was an explosive device, and we don't search for explosive devices. The officers had made an error.
Did the bomb squad get called? Are they here?
The bomb squad is here now.
It took how long for the bomb squad to respond?
You know, I don't really know.
About 2 hours, maybe?
I would say that's a good estimate.
Why wouldn't they respond faster? Do you get so many bomb threats in the city and every hour?
Again, please, I do not work for LAPD. The LAPD bomb squad responded to our request that I had submitted through their command post. So I don't know why.
Who do you work for?
I work for the Los Angeles County Office of Public Safety.
Is there a representative from LAPD that we could speak with?
I don't know if there is or not, but they have a sergeant downstairs.
Mm. What's his name, King?
But I think they were heading to the basement, just so they can continue, you know, with their speakers and everything. And then as soon as LAPD clears the van, then we hope to let the Shadow Convention back into the auditorium.
Why weren't we allowed to move our truck to do the same thing? Because our television show is not allowed to go on because of this action, even though
because
we were trying
right
to get
clearance. Next to the vehicle that is suspected of having an explosive device.
Well, one thing that I actually discovered is that, you know, a good 25 minutes after our satellite operator had been evacuated from his van, I went and found another production truck that was actually much closer to the suspected vehicle that was full of production staff from the Shadow Convention. Were they not of concern, or was that an oversight on the officers on the scene?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, there's another production truck that's parked actually right on the corner. It says RVP on it. And I went down after our satellite truck guy came up here, and it was full of people. I got behind the lines, and there were people in there. They weren't evacuated.
That shouldn't have happened. I was not aware of that.
Okay.
So, no.
So are you planning to evacuate it up here?
No. No. You have to understand that I have very limited information.
Excuse me. Can I introduce a senior executive here?
How are you doing, sir? We've already met.
Yeah.
Again, LAPD does not share all information with us. They don't. It's, you know, the old military need to know. We were informed that a vehicle matching that description was suspected by LAPD of having an explosive device or somehow being involved with it. Based upon that information, we called LAPD. After they have looked at it, they agreed that there was a very good likelihood that that was the vehicle. They then confirmed our request for the bomb squad, and the bomb squad rolled.
Was protocol followed for this?
As far as I know, but again, I'm not with LAPD.
Like a two-hour delay in response on the bomb squad?
My experience has been that it is sometimes longer than that.
In downtown?
The bomb squad does not roll on every bomb threat that comes in.
Now?
Yes.
And what have they found?
I don't know. I'm up here talking to you.
And what about
the clearing the building right now?
No, we're not clearing the building. No, we're not clearing the building.
I just got thrown off the 8th floor by about 50 helmeted officers. Could you explain that?
I think that you were told to leave that.
I was told to leave the 8th floor.
Yeah. No, I can't explain that.
An officer up there wearing your uniform told me that they were clearing the building. Is that false information?
That's false information.
Why are they clearing the 8th floor?
I don't know, sir.
You have a truck allegedly with explosives in the back of the building. Mm-hmm. You have approximately 500 to 1,000 people in the building. You've known that there was a bomb threat for 2 hours. You're now clearing the 8th floor, but you can't give us any information about what's going on?
I thought I just did.
What is it?
Well, I'm not going to repeat the whole scenario.
I'm
not going to answer that question.
What's happening to the truck?
I don't know, except that the bomb squad is there.
And you're not clearing the building.
I am not clearing the building. I am evacuating. All right, you're through.
You are listening to Lieutenant Newton, who heads up the area here of Los Angeles County Office of Public Safety. And Juan, it may not come as a surprise to people to know that 15 minutes after the window closed for the satellite time for crashing the party, which would have broadcast out around the country, the voices of protesters and people were here to voice their views about the Democratic Party and the convention. 15 minutes after that window closed, they opened the broadcast truck.
Well, it has become a pattern now. We've seen it now in Philadelphia and here in Los Angeles that there is a determination on the part of law enforcement to make sure not only that order is maintained, but that the images of these conventions are not interrupted across the country. And I think it's something that should become a major concern for many Americans, that the issue of dissent and of the right of people to dissent and to protest peacefully. We've seen the preventive detention pickups in Philadelphia and the high bails, the enormously high bails for people on misdemeanor charges. And now we're seeing the beginning of incidents here at the Democratic Convention in Los Angeles.
We have to break for stations to identify themselves. When we come back, we'll be joined by Danny Schechter, the news dissector, and get final comments from our guests. You're not going to see them very much in the mainstream media, as they describe something that was taking place as Hillary Clinton and President Clinton were talking about peace and prosperity in the country today. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Back in a minute.
My country isn't free. We build our military from sea to sea. Spread like a virus blight with all our taxes might. From cops and guards who shoot on sight to the weapons industry. Our bombs are smart and fast. Our tanks are built to last longer than schools. Behind a prison fence languish the dissidents who speak of peace and common sense, rights overruled.
You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez in an unprecedented broadcast, bringing together community media, that's community radio and community television around the country. The tape we just heard, among those in the questioning, was Brian Drolet, who is one of the people involved with Free Speech TV that is involved with the broadcast, both of Crashing the Party and Democracy Now! As we broadcast on Dish Network at 9415 and People's Public Access stations, as well as community radio. Juan, as we were being closed down here, very difficult to do work. The police were moving in and they were moving out. Outside, Gore Vidal was forced into the street. He was giving the convention. He was giving the shadow convention speech, as he would then holding a megaphone and doing it. And at that point, they moved in paramilitary forces, all in black, coming in black cars, riot troops. They got out and they said that they heard, and our cameraman, Skip Blumberg, was videoing all of this. What they were saying, that there was rioting in the streets, and so they were moving in on top of the bomb threat.
As I say, it's remarkable the degree of mobilization that Los Angeles is undertaking to basically deal with this protest. Of course, was the largest, but it was, as I said, I was there for
this was over the concert
this evening at the concert. It was very peaceful and very racially mixed and a variety of issues, and that they would use this technique, which has been used in other cities. It was used in New York by Mayor Giuliani's police to pull the plug on a protest and attempt to move in like this is really something that's indefensible.
And yet, Michael Slate, today in the or yesterday at night in the network news, saw no news of protests. Granted, this happened afterwards, what was taking place, Rage Against the Machine, those nightly news contests. But there were the nightly news shows, but there were protests that were taking place all day.
I saw a lot that was going on. People arrested in the morning. When I was walking from Pershing Square to the Staples Center, I saw hundreds of police. At the slightest moment, they were doing U-turns on one-way streets. When we were walking out of the Staples Center trying to get away from the thing after it was over, after the concert, we saw hundreds of police again. Police running down the street chanting, "Whose streets? Our streets," in full riot gear.
Jennifer Blyer, you were behind police lines because you had credentials at the concert last night. What were the police saying to you as they were beating up these Chicano kids?
They were basically giving me very candid explanations of what they were doing. I mean, when I saw that one very horrifying moment of the four teenagers who were slammed up against the fence being beaten repeatedly with batons by mounted cops on horses, I asked one officer, why are they doing that? And he certainly didn't deny what we had all seen in plain view. On our side of the fence, things were fairly calm. And he said, oh, they have to disperse. They were told to disperse. And
these were people who were not arrested, right?
No, nobody was under arrest. And when I left the site after everyone had been cleared, I asked a few officers, had there been any arrests tonight? And they said that as far as they knew, there had actually been no arrests. And they had given people a warning to disperse. Or actually, when the horses came in, it looked like all the people who were being chased down were trying to disperse. They were heading off in kind of a southbound direction, and they were chased back towards the north side of the lot by the horses and cops. So these were kids who were trying to leave, who were chased back into the lot by the horses.
See, and it's important to note that when a policeman beats someone, they usually arrest them and charge them with assault on a police officer and resisting arrest. So if they're beating people and then not even arresting them, then it's clear that what's involved here is intimidation, is attempts to basically break up these protests and without having to have the paper trail of arrests and the kind of situation that developed in Philadelphia.
At one moment, I asked one of the superior officers who was on my side of the fence where I was standing if the protesters indeed had a permit to gather, and he said, yes, well, they had a permit, but cops have the right at any moment to make a lawful assembly an unlawful assembly, and they decided at some moment that this was an unlawful assembly, and therefore everyone could be arrested. At a moment's notice, they can make that decision.
At a time like this, I think we need to bring in Danny Schechter, the news dissector. You've had some interesting experiences this week, hearing about what editors at corporate newspapers and networks are telling their reporters to cover.
Well, for one thing, the protest has been covered in the local press here in Los Angeles, and it's covered as the protest, but without any reference to any of the specific issues that people are protesting. So protesters versus Democratic National Committee, protesters win rights from federal court. All of this has been almost page one in the Los Angeles Times. But if you really want to know what the protest is about, why people are out there, what they care about, what their concerns are, you have to jump into the depths of the paper, and certainly you don't get very much of it on TV. I mean, tonight or last night in Los Angeles, there was a lot of local coverage leading up to the network broadcasts, which showed the protests because the local news, this was kind of the action news formula and format that they live for. But once the networks hit the air with the newscast, the protests all but disappeared because the script or the frame of the news was what was happening inside the hall and, previewing Bill and Hill, previewing what was going to be said, and painting the picture of the Democratic Convention. And in a sense, in that respect, the demonstrators were considered persona non grata. They weren't really part of that script and were therefore marginalized from it. I mean, the networks have the capacity, if they want to give you a picture live from the moon at the same time as they're inside the Staples Center. They could have shown what was happening outside the hall, and in Chicago in 1968 they did. They split the screen, but they're not doing it here in Los Angeles, in part because the ideas that are animating the protest are not considered part of really the debate here. The debate is about will the Democrats get through this convention with Al Gore and anoint him in this coronation? And that's really what the networks are covering.
Well, Natasha Blake, why were you out at the concert? Were you just there last night to see a concert and to have a good time?
No, with my involvement with the Artist Network of Refuse and Resist, this has been planned for a long time, to plan a peaceful community event that would bring together all groups of people with a peaceful march from Pershing Square to outside the Staples Center. And unfortunately, it just goes to show that in this country, your right to free speech is shut down. And in this country, this is what democracy looks like right now. And last night was a really unfortunate turn of events. And
well, Erica Crumble, what brought you here to participate in some of the demonstrations? What were the issues that have motivated you?
Well, actually, I was born and raised in the Rampart district of Los Angeles.
So I've seen and experienced a lot, since I was a child, and that includes a lot of police brutality.
So that was my, you know, major issue. And since then, you know, Mumia has been something that's been very close to my heart, you know, his issue. And I was there for the march yesterday, and being a part of the Artists Network, that's what we try to do. We are building a culture, you know, of resistance. That includes music, that includes performance art, that includes all these things. And so we try to, you know, in the protest scene, you know, we want art as a form of expression.
You know, speaking of Mumia, and I'm here with MediaChannel.org, which is a global website monitoring the media, and I'm writing a daily dispatch on the media coverage. And I was told by someone today who spoke to two press photographers, one for the LA Times and one for the New York Times, who basically were instructed or told that pictures of the demonstration with likenesses of Mumia would not be put in either newspaper, although the New York Times did, for the first time that I've seen in a long, long time, actually carry a story about the Mumia march here in Los Angeles. So that was, in a sense, a breakthrough. But generally
which
speaking,
which may well have more to do with the persistence of the reporter than anything else. Yeah.
But there does seem, and I got a call earlier. One of the things we do on our website is publish whistleblower stories. Let's say a Juan Gonzalez at the Daily News was writing something, and the editors wouldn't publish it. We'd encourage him to tell his story on the media channel if that was ever the case. Well, I got a call from a reporter for a news magazine who is basically telling me that he is going to be writing a piece about his battle with his editor, who basically said, we're not interested in protest stories, period. So no question, there's been an attempt both by the media and by the Democratic Party to marginalize the protest. But that's not so surprising if you realize that the media is part of politics today. It doesn't stand apart from politics. The media is part of the governing class, if you will. There wouldn't be politics in America without the media, and these conventions wouldn't be happening without the media, and probably we wouldn't be here either. But the main point is that politics is media politics is politics in America today. And this is something that we have to understand as part of our analysis. What bothers me is that the protesters here are not marching on the media. They're not protesting the media somehow. They're protesting, you know, the Gap, you know, but not the media. And I think that that may change also as more and more activists become more conscious and aware of the role of the media in our society.
We're also joined in the studio at the Independent Media Center by John Sellers, who's the director of Rucka Society, who just got out of jail in Philadelphia. $1 million bail was set for him, then reduced to $100,000, and he's out. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thanks for having me.
So what happened to you in Philadelphia?
Well, like hundreds of other people in Philadelphia, I was arrested on fraudulent charges and had an outrageous bail amount set for me, and was mistreated by the system, the same system that we were speaking out against.
Explain why. What were the charges that were brought against you? What were you picked up with? What were you carrying?
Well, I was literally walking down Market Street in downtown Philadelphia when I was arrested. I had my cell phone, my wallet, and my Swiss Army knife on me. They confiscated my cell phone and my Swiss Army knife, calling them instruments of crime. So I guess I was guilty of using a cell phone for dastardly purposes in Philadelphia. And the original charge that I saw was actually aggravated assault on a police officer. They later took that charge away and dumped 8 charges, 14 counts onto my record, all misdemeanors, which they charged me $1 million bail for.
Explain what the Rucka Society has been doing, what its role is in the protests in Seattle, Washington, the World Bank, IMF, Philadelphia, the Republican Convention, and here in Los Angeles.
Well, the Rucka Society is a community of activists that specialize in the use of nonviolent direct action and creative protest for positive change. And we conduct action training camps where we bring hundreds of activists together for 4 to 6 days to share skills in a dynamic learning environment and really hone how social change works in a nonviolent way and how to create very powerful symbols to educate the world about complex issues and bring about just social change with regards to human rights, the environment, fair trade, labor issues, a whole host of different issues that we service different communities.
John, do you think you were targeted by federal government officials. I mean, there was a clear involvement of federal agencies in Philadelphia and probably here in Los Angeles as well. And there's been a lot of talk of the targeting of so-called protest leaders.
Well, the police commissioner said it himself, right? John Timoney. He said that we have to bring federal agents into this, like the FBI, to stop these protests from taking over city after city.
Well, one of the things that the district attorney of Philadelphia is throwing around is some kind of 28-page dossier that she keeps referring to specifically on me that she will not make public right now. So I think that there, you know, obviously I've been seeing an escalation in the use of surveillance and sort of underhanded low-level interference with regards to the action, you know, community. And we're seeing more and more of that. Specifically targeting folks from Ruckus. So I would say that that's definitely true.
Do you think, though, that anyone say to you, or did you get any sense that they knew who you were, that you had been identified in some way, that you were the big fish?
Oh, I absolutely got that sense. I've never had the pleasure of being arrested by that many officers. You know, it was incredible. It was three or four lieutenants, a couple of captains, and finally a deputy commissioner came out to make the arrest. I was alone, but they moved in with about 35 guys and had this race through the streets of downtown Philadelphia with motorcycles weaving in and out. They cut off four one-way streets to take us zipping down at the wrong way. It was like a bad SWAT movie. And they specifically said that they knew who I was. They had a lot of information about Ruckus. I was very transparent and open with them about giving them more information. I said we had nothing to hide. But the district attorney was very candid in saying that she set the bail amount for me because I was the ringleader, a person who created the context for the mayhem and destruction to happen, and that she was specifically interested in keeping me off the streets and away from L.A.
Did they want to keep you out of Los Angeles?
I just wanted to ask one question in terms of the development of Ruckus. One of the things that struck me most when there was the big meeting at the United Nations where various corporations began developing their partnerships with the UN. At the press conference, one of the participants there said, "Remember Seattle." And his basic message was that something had to be done for corporations around the world to begin changing their image. Because one of the things I think, John, that you've been very good at in Ruckus is being able to, as you say, develop creative ways to get a message of what corporate globalization is doing to the environment, to various other issues. And it seems that the very proliferation of media,
just like in
war, means that people have to be able to cut off any bad publicity, however small, because the word spreads among the population. Are you getting the sense that your effectiveness is increasingly putting the price on your head higher and higher?
Yes or no, John?
Yes, there's a concerted effort, no question about it. I think Tom Hayden said as social movements become more effective, governments become more repressive, and I think that's what we're seeing right now.
When is your trial date?
September 16th.
In Philadelphia, and others set at $1 million, $500,000, $450,000 bail?
Yes, there are still 20 people in the prison system in Philadelphia, and two people with extraordinary charges still there.
Well, I want to thank you, John Sellers, director of Ruckus Society, Danny Schechter, the News Dissector, MediaChannel.org, as well as the people who are out at the protest last night who've come in to bear witness to what took place in the police in Los Angeles. That does it for today's program. Democracy Now! Is produced by Jeremy Scahill with help from Deepa Fernandez. We are broadcasting from the Independent Media Center in Los Angeles. Our technical director, Grayson Challenger, assistance from Sanazma Zafari and Karen Palmer, Nell Geiser, video productions by Dee Dee Halleck, Skip Lumberg, Linda Ayanna Cohn, Carlos Perea, John Hamilton, internet production by Prothap Chatterjee, Jay Pennington, George Langworthy, Peter St. Marie, Chase Pearson, Jonathan Stewart, Garrett Darlin. From the center here in downtown Los Angeles at Patriotic Hall, I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!
Sorry, John.
From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now! Live from the Independent Media Center in Los Angeles, we are breaking with convention, power, protest, and the presidency. Thousands protest Al Gore's ties to Occidental Petroleum in the streets of Los Angeles. Police beat and trample demonstrators. Also, as police in L.A. continue to make arrests, dozens remain in prison in Philadelphia. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Last night, a concert of Rage Against the Machine just outside the Staples Center where President Clinton and Hillary Clinton were addressing the Democratic National Convention. Police moved in on the concertgoers and protesters and beat and trampled some of those people. We are joined in the studio at the Independent Media Center right now by a person who identifies himself as Dusk. Welcome to Democracy Now! What happened to you?
It was kind of chaotic from all angles. Just for those who were not there, Rage Against the Machine went on. They did their thing. They lifted the spirits of the crowd incredibly. And after Rage Against the Machine, Ozo Motley took the stage. And that's when things got to be kind of hectic because I think it was two songs into their set, they cut the sound. And then we hear the LAPD's voice over the system letting everybody know that this is an illegal gathering and that everybody is going to be ordered to disperse or face the possibility of getting charged with any of those charges or subject to anything else, which ultimately ended up being small bombs of pepper spray, other types of, I think they shot rubber bullets and whatnot. But basically what happened to me, I was by the stage area, they cut the sound, moved in on mounted police, and that's when things got hectic because the crowd ran in every which direction. People were just trying to get out of there. That was the basic thing. People were just trying to get out of the area without getting hurt. But that really didn't matter because the cops came down on us. I got hit with, I don't think it was a rubber bullet, but a pellet or something of that sort, which definitely hurt. But after that, what happened is the police tried to, as much as possible, break up the crowd into smaller groups, so I'm sure they wouldn't congregate.
But Dusk, why were you at this concert?
I was at this concert.
Are you from Los Angeles?
I am from Los Angeles, not originally here since I was the age of six. But Los Angeles is what I consider home. And I was here supporting the Artist Network for Refuse and Resist, which is a group of artists, both visual artists, music artists, et cetera, that come together to raise consciousness through artistic mediums about issues of injustice, like the incarceration of Mumia Abu-Jamal. So that is the primary reason that I was at the convention last night. So.
Well, we are going to continue to follow up on the protests that took place just in a few minutes. We'll be talking about what began yesterday morning as the protests against Al Gore's connection to Occidental Petroleum, which is threatening to drill on UA territory in Colombia. Also, Occidental Petroleum's role right here in the state of California. But with other news headlines, as protests continues here in Los Angeles at the Democratic Convention, this news from around the world, the Czech Republic Interior Minister announced that activists who are planning to come to Prague in September to protest against globalization during the IMF and World Bank annual session might be denied entrance to the country. Members of the Initiative Against Economic Globalization, known as IMPEG, Prague 2000, which is preparing most protest events in Prague, says it's clear to them that activists who organize protests in Washington or Seattle will be targeted for refusal of entry. The activists say the police will use international lists of activists. The FBI is among the agencies currently working in Prague.
And Amy, the other major news headline, Russia's Navy was trying to rescue more than 100 sailors trapped in a crippled nuclear-powered submarine on the bottom of the sea yesterday after its crew was forced to run aground. The head of the Navy said the submarine bore marks of a big and serious collision and that he was pessimistic about a positive outcome. A spokesman for the Navy's general staff said that one of the possibilities was that the accident had been caused by the submarine's collision with a foreign submarine.
And that does it for the headlines. I just want to say that Dusk, our guest, as our headliner, is wearing a black T-shirt with a yellow warning sign. It says, "Danger, police in area." And you've just been listening to the sounds of the street in Los Angeles. Slightly different sound than what you might have been watching on television if you were watching the opening night of the Democratic National Convention with Hillary Rodham Clinton and Bill Clinton giving their major addresses. Tonight, it's expected that Jesse Jackson will be speaking. And, of course, this all leads up to Thursday night with a distance from last night with the Clintons, Al Gore, who will receive the nomination of the Democratic Party for president. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez. We are broadcasting from the Independent Media Center in Patriotic Hall in downtown Los Angeles, just blocks from the Staples Center. That's right, the name of a corporation on that convention center where Al Gore is being nominated. Juan, you've been spending your time not only in the streets watching the protesters, but in some other places in Los Angeles.
Yes, Amy. Well, I went yesterday to an old spot that I visit regularly whenever I'm in Los Angeles, and that was the intersection of Florence and Normandy in South Central L.A., because it's only a few miles away from the Staples Center, but it's been almost forgotten now in the news of the Democratic Party. But as I said in my